Good afternoon. I'm going to call to order the Los Osos Groundwater Basin Management Committee meeting. We'll start with a roll call, Dan.
Yes. Director Susanna?
I'm here.
Director Reinecke?
Here.
Chair Zimmer?
Here.
And Director Gibson is absent. I was informed that was originally intending to participate remotely, but is now not going to be able to participate at all in the meeting.
Yeah. Okay. And so with his absence, we can proceed with the meeting. Nothing that we have on our agenda requires a unanimous vote that requires him to be here?
Yeah, to my knowledge, we don't have any specific actions that the stipulated judgment calls out as requiring unanimous approval. So okay. I think we can proceed with the full agenda.
Okay, sounds good.
Good question.
All right, we'll move to item 3, the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic for it to stand, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we're going to move to item 4, board member comments. Do you have any board member comments?
Nothing particular.
Nothing. I have one comment regarding our PFAS monitoring. So we've talked about that in the past, and where we talked about it last is Golden State did some volunteer monitoring of PFAS in our sources going into our distribution system. And so we did have a notification on one of those entry points to our system. But what we did is we did additional sampling voluntarily. We haven't had the orders to actually do this PFAS sampling yet, but we've done it voluntarily to find out which source. There was multiple sources that went into one of our storage tanks. And so we know which well that is in our Los Olivos site. And we do have, it was interesting because we have two wells. One of them was non-detect. The other one had the detection limit, but it was below the response or the action level. So it was higher than what we saw going into the distribution point, because it is a blended water when it goes out into the distribution. So this one coming from the well, it was higher. It was close to the action limit, but still only within the notification level. So what we're going to do is we're going to have an addendum to our previous notification and just update with those findings. But it's just interesting that those two wells are so close to each other, and one of them's non-detect, the other one is, you know, had the notification level. So we're looking into that a little bit further to try to understand it. But, you know, it's all so new, and there's just so many moving parts to this right now. Yeah, it's just where we are. I thought it'd be important to mention it during this meeting.
If you don't mind, I'll interject that sure. We did do sampling.
Okay.
So we are under order. So we've submitted our samples to the EPA. So we'll see what happens with those.
Happens. Okay. Yeah. And it's, you know, I was looking on the map there's not a lot in this area. So compared to some of the other areas that we look like in San Bernardino and all these other just long standing, I guess it would be associated with industrial or something. But those wells there, it's just riddled with, you know, seeing it out there. But here we haven't had, and maybe it's just because we really haven't gone through a lot of sampling yet, and it's to come. But yeah, it's where we're at now.
Can I ask a question about that?
Sure, if I can answer it. I'm not the expert on it, but
sure. No, so yeah, it is very interesting. The two wells are close in proximity. Do you happen to know if the well that has the detection was upper or lower aquifer?
I believe it is a combination of, but there is some in, yeah, it's our older well. And so there could be some compromise even outside of the screened area. So we could have a hole in the casing that's allowing some infiltration in an area that we don't necessarily have zoned for. So we're looking into some of those details. We don't have all that figured out, trying to understand it a little better.
Okay.
Just because that is a unique, I mean, they're actually very similar wells. And then one to not have non-detect and one to have this other, it just is peculiar and we don't fully understand it yet.
Groundwater basins.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Other than that, that's the only comment I have. Okay.
Public comment on our comments?
If you'd like to make a public comment and you are online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. There is no public comment online.
There is no public comment in the boardroom. Okay. Moving on to item five, we have special presentation. There are no presentations today. We'll go to item six, consent agenda. On the consent agenda, we have our 2023 budget update and invoice register, and then the approval of the minutes from December 6th BMC meeting. Any comments or any desire to pull that consent agenda?
No, the minutes look fine to me, okay. And everything else did too.
All right. I have one comment on the minutes, and it talks about, it's the opening of the minutes where it talks about that I opened the meeting, but I wasn't actually here. So I think that was just a carryover from the past meeting, because it does list Matt correctly as attending in my place as the alternate. So I think it was just an oversight there. Okay, any... we'll open it up to public comment on the consent agenda.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand or come up to the podium. There is no public comment online.
And there's no public comment in the boardroom.
So I'll move to approve the consent agenda.
I'm going to need to abstain from that since I wasn't here.
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion and approval?
Yep. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes 3-0.
Okay. We're moving to item 7, public comments for items not appearing on the agenda.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. I also have one written in comment. Would you like me to read that first?
Sure, that would be great.
Perfect. Andrea Peck writes, Dear Los Osos Basin Management Committee, my name is Andrea Peck. I live at 1435 10th Street. I am speaking for myself and my neighbors. We have an unmanageable amount of stormwater runoff that is directed through our properties between 11th Street and 9th Street near El Moro Street. This is a hazardous amount of rainwater in the tens of thousands of gallons that during an average rain quickly surges beyond the capacity of our residents. I believe this could be redirected from 11th Street to the Baywood Elementary Basin at 9th and El Moro in order to recapture this water and allow it to percolate the ground into the groundwater basin. A similar project is underway in Oceano that captures water from 11 acres and utilizes the elementary school for groundwater recharge. This neighborhood project was mainly funded by grant money, $1.2 million, from the State Water Resource Control Board. We are lucky to already have a basin, which may bring costs down. Thank you. I also have some online, so I don't know if you have them in the boardroom as well.
Yeah, I think we're going to have one in the boardroom, but let's go ahead and take online first.
Perfect. All right, Deborah, you just have to unmute yourself.
Hello, good afternoon. Deborah Howe, resident of Los Osos. I have a question about the nitrate study as it in regards to the Cabrillo Estates area. Do we have an update on that?
Deborah, they'll answer questions after public comment is done. Did you have anything else to say?
That's all I needed. Thank you.
All right, perfect. Thank you. All right, Jeff, you just have to unmute yourself.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I was curious. I've mentioned this a couple times, but the GIS database for the wells overlying the basin, that I understand it's been completed for some time now, and I would appreciate knowing more why it hasn't been released to the public. I understand there was some tweaks and some clearances, but it really should be ready now. I think that's something that we need to, the work's been completed. Let's get it out into the public. That would be the first item. The second item is also something I've referenced in the past, and I would encourage the board to look at the feasibility of an inflatable dam at Los Osos Creek to use on a seasonal basis when flows are very high so that we can optimize lower basin recharge. There is a United Kingdom company that is prepared to make a presentation to your committee, and it's a very low tech, low cost way to complement the other basin plan initiatives that are underway. Thank you.
There is no further public comment online.
Okay, we have public comment in the boardroom.
Thank you, dear. Good afternoon, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I pulled up again. I think I'm again questioning the equity of the expenses spent on our basin management. When 50% of the water being extracted is under the management of the county of San Luis Obispo, and yet their payment, their contribution to all the infrastructure is $70,665, whereas the CSD and Golden State have a total of $134,264 each. In other words, it's obvious that the infrastructure, the majority of the infrastructure is being funded by the paying customers, whereas the people on private wells overseen by the county pay zero, nothing. I, again, am asking that we begin to look at the monitoring. It is being instituted all over California now because it's obvious that without having a more precise number of how many acre feet are taken out by private wells, we have no idea exactly what the future of our water basin is, and we can't until we do monitor those. Aerial monitoring is, you know, if you've got nothing better, that's something. But the very fact that the private properties that are using private wells contribute nothing, whereas the rest of us contribute on our water bills quite a, you know, fair share of this, is it's not equitable, and it's really not productive to getting a balanced basin that we all work together towards. And so I urge that we, again, come back and visit the metering, what it costs to put a quantity meter on each well and have it looked at once a year, every 6 months, possibly, so that we can have a closer idea of how much is coming out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are we ready? Good afternoon. Happy New Year to everyone. Glad to be here and to see all of you. I just have a couple of short things. One is, you know, there's talk about recharging aquifers all over the place. And I was out with a friend walking over on the wetland restoration. I can't remember what it's called over here on, off Turi Road. And we had also gone to different areas up Clark Valley just to check creek flow. And I have a friend that lives right there. But I'm wondering, is there possibilities for any of those type projects to be added along the creek? I know a bladder dam can be a big hassle because of the environmental issues there, but you know, what if it's a more natural type thing where it's restoration of the creek area? You know, we have a lot of wetlands, little things around town. Is there some way that we can benefit the environment and our aquifer by enhancing those? So that was, yeah, I just would love to see that because we have so much, you know, environmentally sensitive habitat around here and incredible wildlife. You know, we had 500 people visit Morro Bay for the bird festival this weekend. So those areas are really important. So I don't know who would take that on and want to look into something like that, or if that's, I think the other project was in concert with the NEP and Fish and Wildlife, but that'd be awesome to do something that's a solution that helps the place and the people. Thank you.
Thank you, Becky. We have no further public comment. Bring it back to the board. Any follow up on that, Dan? Anything you want to respond to?
Yeah, a couple of comments were received from the public about stormwater recharge opportunities. I guess I would comment that one of the primary initiatives the BMC is working on right now is a transient groundwater model. And I think that's going to be a critical tool in helping us evaluate projects of that type that have more of an intermittent contribution to the groundwater basin. And so that'll be, I think, useful. I think looking for opportunities to combine projects that have water supply benefits with potentially flood control benefits, you know, those multi-benefit type projects are popular for grant funding and other funding sources. So that's hopefully there'll be opportunities for that as we move forward. The GIS database is complete and is something that could be made publicly available. It just hasn't been because it's, well, frankly, it's a database and it's the very detailed technical tool and document that, you know, may or may not have a lot of public interest, but it is complete as stated in the executive director's report. Nitrate. Yeah. So I don't know if Director Reinecke has any more updated information, but the latest update on nitrate, the nitrate study that I have, was that the regional board was coordinating with the county on potential next steps for further investigating nitrate contamination in that portion of the aquifer.
I don't really have anything. I think the water board has kind of taken this project over. Are we expecting an update from James Bishop anytime in the future?
Great question. Yeah. So in the latest correspondence from James Bishop with the water board was that he anticipated another update at the end of February.
That well database, too technical. If somebody wants it, are there privacy concerns? I know that we talked about that at one point.
Yeah, that there were some privacy concerns, and that's why it took a little bit longer to be complete. But no, we've gone through, we've combed it, the purveyors have reviewed it, we've removed any confidential information. So yeah, if there's somebody's interested, I think they could request it, and we should be able to make it available.
I think we heard that. Do we put that on a website, a link to that? How do we handle that? Give somebody a hard copy? That might be the most difficult way.
Yeah, I'd have to look to see. I mean, they're pretty efficient in terms of the amount of data a database takes up. I mean, probably something we could send as an email attachment, if not a file transfer link. So yeah, if there's interest, I would say probably the easiest way would be to email me as the executive director, and we'll make that available.
Thank you.
Do you think that's going to be something that we will have on our webpage, or is it just too big of a file and cumbersome, or is it something, I mean, ultimately, there's certain data that is too far in the details that the majority of people wouldn't want, but there may be certain things that may be beneficial as a presentation type. You know, I'm just thinking like a map or some kind of a ledger or something that just talks about these different wells out there. Do you think there's something that we could provide? I mean, if you know, you have certain people that are technical that want to dive into that, and they're going to dissect it and spend that time. But then you have another, you know, that probably the majority of the community would appreciate looking at something. So at least we have a deliverable for that item.
That's a good point. And so the kind of a preview, but we've got a new website, which I think is going to create provide new opportunities for making information available to the public. Your ideas generated some ideas. I mean, we do have kind of an interactive GIS online mapping tool on the website. I think it might be county maintained currently, but it's something that we could build upon and, you know, include more detailed information specific to the Los Osos Basin, and the well database could be one aspect of that. So how about maybe let me talk with the other staff representatives and think about, you know, what is the best way to make this data available and useful for the community?
Yeah, my main interest was just that those that want it. You know, anybody that really is out after it, it doesn't have to be a presentation or anything that's going to glaze my eyes.
Can I make a, this may have been a better in the beginning on comments, but this is sort of to bring everything full circle. We've heard a lot of comments about being creative with our groundwater supply. And I'm wondering if it's worth exploring the potential for converting our wastewater treatment plant to something that could be a direct potable reuse. I know we're considering a pipeline between Morro Bay and Los Osos already. What would it take for us to do some kind of, analysis or study for Los Osos to consider what that might look like for us in the future? I mean, of course, very far into the future, but something that may provide some long-term resiliency and sustainability for our water supply.
Yeah, no, good question. And, you know, you're probably hearing many coastal communities in California and throughout the world, really, and not just coastal communities, are looking at potable reuse as a new water supply opportunity. And actually, that is something that we will be directly looking at as part of the water recycling funding study. So that initiative really is underway. And so we should have more specific information on the costs and the feasibility and the benefits of different potable reuse opportunities here in the coming probably year, I would say, as that study. So it's kind of the, we talk a lot about the transient model because that's the groundwater piece. The other big piece of that initiative is the recycled water alternatives. And really, it's not just recycled water, it's recycled water and then other water supply alternatives analysis that the model will support. So
good question.
Lots of good information to come out here, not just on potable reuse, but other water supply opportunities.
Yeah, I think there's also grant opportunity for those types of projects, but ultimately I would think that project, the county would have to be the lead on that type of a, you know, I wouldn't want to pay for analysis and funding of something that the county has no intention on pursuing. So if they were the lead agency on that and we were going to help support and help facilitate that, that's where I think our role would be. But if we're going to initiate this scope of work for us to do here and pay for it, and then it just goes and sits on a shelf, we need to be aware of that it would have to be the county that would really be the agency that would have to pursue that.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's an important distinction, and I think something that you know, the county has expressed, you know, to me as well, is that, you know, it's important for us all to remember the roles and responsibilities of the different agencies and organizations. You know, it's one water, but that certain, like, the county owns and operates a wastewater facility for the purposes of, you know, treating wastewater within the community. Now, that has the potential to provide water supply benefits that could benefit a larger community base but, you know, outside. And so how do you make that equitable in terms of, you know, are we making the right, and all that can be figured out, but it's just something to, it's important to have as when you're considering these different water supply alternatives in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one time we were talking, we touch everything, every part of, whether it's stormwater capture, recycled water, it's all connected to us in some way, but just got to be aware who's going to be that lead agency and the lead role of following through and making the projects happen.
Oh, thank you. So I think what inspired me to bring that up is probably the availability of grant funding. Yeah. And I think that you're right. The county would have to lead that, but there's a lot of potential out there. And I think Los Osos is a candidate for something like that. So that was kind of why I wanted to make that comment.
Yeah, no, and it's a really good comment. I think we, you know, we would want to help push that conversation along. But since Bruce isn't here, we can kind of talk openly like that, right? Sure, he would have a comment on that one. So let's continue that conversation when he's here.
Yeah, and I would just add that there are all kinds of different collaboration models, with specifically when you start talking about these potable reuse projects, because they do typically they include an involvement of a wastewater organization and a drinking water organization. Yeah. And so whether it's JPAs or it's single owner operator or water purchase agreements, and you know, there's a number of different mechanisms that you can utilize to make it happen. It's just whatever best fits the community and the agencies involved.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we are going to close public comment and move to item 8, the executive director's report.
Thank you, Chair Zimmer. Yeah, happy to provide the executive director's report. We've got quite a bit here, and that was intentional. We wanted to use the executive director's report for this meeting as an opportunity to really just to highlight some of the initiatives and activities that the BMC has been taking on. So just to start, you know, the first item to highlight is that the BMC has launched its new website, www.lososbmc.org. This website is available and will be the new platform for making information available to the community relative to, you know, the Los Osos groundwater basin and more specifically, you know, the Los Osos Basin Management Committee. The other piece of that is that we will be now utilizing this new website to manage the email distribution list for the Los Osos Basin Management Committee. So if you're interested in getting notifications about upcoming meetings, receiving the meeting agenda packets, drafts of the annual report or other BMC related information, I encourage you to go to the new website and sign up. Those of you that were already on the list from the previous website, we've transferred all your emails over. And so hopefully you received notification of this email, or sorry, of this meeting via email, as well as a notification about the availability of the new website. I would say that the current version of the website is pretty the standard platform for like a community services district or other similar type of organization. We've utilized their format. We've primarily just migrated information from the old site to the new website. But really looking for opportunities to improve the website, to provide additional information where helpful and beneficial. So glad to take input on, you know, and we've already gotten some, which is great, on what to put on the new website, and looking to continually to improve that tool as we move forward. And then some other project updates. We talked about the well database. It is complete and scrubbed of confidential information and being utilized to support the development of the transient model. So it's great to build a tool and then immediately find an opportunity to use that tool. So yeah, and talking with Spencer Harris, the lead hydrogeologist for the BMC, he's been surprised about how useful it is even with all his years of knowledge and experience in the basin, just being able to quickly get information on wells and where they're constructed and what zones they're screened in and other things. Basin monitoring program improvements. So exciting news to share there as well. In December, the BMC completed construction of the new Skyline monitoring wells. We've kind of talked about this as a well or wells. It's really two separate monitoring wells, one screened in zone D, one screened in zone E at the east end of Skyline Drive. These new wells will be critical in being able to provide us with reliable information on seawater intrusion occurring in those portions of the aquifer at that critical location near the thin clan of the aquifer in the area where we've historically seen the greatest extents of seawater intrusion. And we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get to the chloride metric update. But just to highlight that currently, to get an assessment of conditions in that portion of the aquifer, we're relying upon a production well that has borehole leakage and doesn't always provide us representative information, actually, and as it didn't provide in fall of 2023, which we'll cover later. So very excited to have this new well installed. It's one of the probably biggest initiatives, at least in terms of cost. Well, I guess the transient model costs quite a bit more, but it was good to get done and get in before our funding deadlines, and happy to have that tool available. That plays into the basin metric evaluation, which is next on the executive director's report. This is an initiative that has been on hold, and you know, I would characterize it as being on hold for a good reason. We've been able to, over the last 2 years, make significant improvements to our monitoring program. And so we've intentionally not brought forth recommendations on how we may would want to consider modifying our metrics until we have all these monitoring improvements incorporated so they can be part of those recommendations. So we will continue to work with staff. I think we're envisioning additional monitoring program improvements this year. And so we may continue to hold any changes until those are complete, or we may bring them forward. We'll just see what makes the most sense. The next item, I don't think I got this in. All right. Is one of the things that we wanted to do was an update on the BMC initiative status. And so as an attachment to the executive director's report, I included a staff report from back in January. No, not in January 2024. It was back in fall of 2021. I don't know, several of you were on the committee, or I think maybe just Chair Zimmer were on the committee at the time, but we were struggling to come to agreement on how to spend the limited available BMC funding and or to focus our limited staff resources. And so to help create alignment on where to focus those efforts, we went through what we called an implementation plan exercise. And so a lengthy list of all the different planning and potential implementation or projects that the BMC might want to consider. And then we went through a detailed scoring and ranking exercise of all those different potential projects with representatives from each of the BMC parties. And the outcome of that was a kind of a prioritized list of potential projects for the BMC to consider funding in its each of its calendar year work plans. And so, let's see, bear with me a second. I'm going to try to pull this up on the screen. We're actually going to go to our new website. Oh, do I need to reshare the screen? Let's try this. Nope, not that. Okay, so, well, here's an opportunity to show off a new website. We've got some local pictures here of Los Osos. If anybody has any other pictures they want to contribute to the website, feel free to send them our way. But we're going to navigate to governance board meetings, and then this is where we have all the agendas and agenda packets. And get rid of all of this stuff. And so what I wanted to highlight for the BMC as part of the executive director's report was this prioritized list of initiatives from that implementation plan exercise that I described was completed in 2021. And I'm just going to quickly go through each of these and give an update of kind of the status as a way of, you know, hopefully highlighting, you know, the work that the BMC has accomplished over these last 3 years, at least with respect to the planning initiatives. So the recycled water beneficial use evaluation, this was a concept to evaluate different recycled water opportunities, I think, as we talked about earlier, including potable reuse. This is part of the scope for the water recycling funding study. So underway. Basin monitoring metric evaluation, that, as I just described, is an initiative that's been done. It's been put on hold because we're improving the monitoring program, but that in a lot of ways has been completed. Broderson Mound transducers, those have been installed and gathering data for a number of years now. Climate change assessment, I don't know that we've done a specific initiative related to this, but we will be assessing climate change impacts as part of the transient model and water recycling funding study. Monitoring well improvement study, that's been completed. And in fact, we've also completed a number of the recommended improvements that were included in that study and continuing to further improve the monitoring network. Pumping management, intertie utilization evaluation. The BMC, I don't think is really specific. Well, that will be analyzed as part of the water recycling funding study. And the CSD is also making good progress on its resiliency project to look at the intertie opportunities to bring in state water to the Los Osos Basin. Model improvements and peer review of the existing groundwater model. So as I described, we're developing a transient model, which will be a huge improvement over our I shouldn't say huge, is a significant improvement over our current model. And we've incorporated a peer review as part of that process. Water supply resiliency study, that's really, I think, along with the recycled water beneficial use evaluation, part of the study that we have underway. Metering of private wells, limited progress on this. I would say, you know, we've talked about there are certain challenges in terms of authority to make this a requirement, but as was stated earlier, this is becoming a more common practice in California, specifically generally associated with the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. So maybe more opportunities for additional metering in the future. Transient groundwater model is underway. Rating curve for Los Osos Creek stream gauge, that's been completed. And then an evaluation of growth allowance criteria. I wouldn't say that that's been completed, but BMC party representatives have been coordinating with county planning for over a year now, just talking about, you know, potential different frameworks and how that could be structured moving forward. So in general, I would say significant progress on a number of the planning initiatives that were laid out in 2021, and we'll continue to identify and evaluate and recommend additional projects as we move forward. The implementation initiatives, this was really, as we went through the exercise, it was identified. So implementation is really differentiated as kind of more of a physical project versus a planning study. And I think one of the things we realized as we went through the exercise is that a lot of these implementation projects really needed a lot more planning before they could be prioritized and or move forward. And so I think that's really where a lot of the effort has been focused, is on those planning initiatives that we described, and then and building the tool sets. And so to evaluate these different potential projects and their benefit to the basin. So a number of these, while we haven't made specific projects on these initiatives, we're building the transient model and we're doing the study that will analyze the different opportunities to implement these projects for the benefit of the basin. And so, yeah, so that was just kind of a highlight of the initiatives that the BMC has taken on over the last several years. Switch back to
here.
Thank you, Ron. I'm more of a Teams guy myself. All right. Okay. Back on track. The other item to highlight here is under the land use planning update process. As the BMC knows, the county released proposed amendments to the Title 19 ordinance related to retrofit to build within Los Osos. The purveyors, Los Osos CSD, Golden State, and S&T collaborated on their review of those proposed amendments and submitted a joint purveyor letter to the county on December 14th, 2023. And that letter from the purveyors is included in the agenda packet for this meeting as an attachment to the executive director's report. And yeah, that concludes the updates associated with the executive director's report.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Any clarifying questions or anything before we go to board or public comment, and then we'll bring it back to the board for discussion if needed.
I just want to one more time say thanks, Ron, for getting that letter together so quickly, and to the other water companies for reviewing it and so quickly, and making all three of us at the top of that letter. I like it.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to go ahead and open it to public comment.
If you'd like to make public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. Would you like to do online or in the boardroom first?
Let's do online first, please, Laura.
Perfect. Deborah, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you. This question is regarding the scoring and ranking chart. It wasn't clear to me what the color coding meant, the red, yellow, green. Could you, Dan, explain that for me, please? That's it. That's my comment.
Perfect. Thank you, Deborah. All right, Jeff, you just have to unmute yourself.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I have a number of comments with regard to both the planning strategies or initiatives and the implementation. First of all, the recycled water beneficial use evaluation and the whole water recycling funding study is dependent on having water to recycle, and we don't have any. So it's been my position from the beginning of this exercise that it was a make-work project and really unnecessary. We have allocated every drop of wastewater coming out of the wastewater recycling facility, and the investigation or analysis of these other of any alternatives, frankly, is a waste of money and time. The idea of direct potable reuse for Los Osos is an absurdity.
We have a project underway, an intertie with the State Water Project. That's the project. We have program C wells. Two of three are in the ground. We have one more to do. We have additional conservation. I've advocated for additional recharge vis-a-vis a natural system in Los Osos Creek. That's all we need to do, frankly. We've got a list of 15 or 20 planning initiatives, most of which are irrelevant. The scoring system actually placed the program C wells at a very low level. So, I think there's a lot of make work by staff, and we need to keep it simple. Follow the KISS principle is my estimation and my recommendation. And really focus. Let's do the things we can do best and not try to do everything. Thank you.
There is no further online public comment.
Okay, thank you. We'll move to the boardroom.
Hi again, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I wanted to address in your item 8, this discussion about growth allowance planning with the county. I would like to see that expand to our advisory council and the community a little bit more. The county is going by the new community plan, which I heard something like another 4 years, but again, people are stuck in between the old plan and the new plan. And I think there's some creativity that could be put forward. I think the community would like to be involved rather than just have the county have closed doors over that. And then as far as this direct potable reuse, you know, the whole promise with this sewer and having recycled water was that we would give it to the farmers who would not pump it out of the ground. And then, you know, we would solve a lot of basin, you know, maybe 40%, is it 37% of the ag use comes from the basin or something. But if we could save that, that is a lot of money saved. But what happened, the sewer plant charged more than it would cost for them to take it out themselves. Therefore, they said, forget that. And secondly, the water's not clean enough. So one more treatment train on the end of our sewer plant could save us all kinds of money, as well as 37% of the pumping might be cut back. And we wouldn't be paying the electricity to send it from one end of town to as far away as we could possibly send it to sink into the ground in a project we don't even know if the Roterson plan is effective or going to do anything to help saltwater intrusion. So those are my two comments.
Becky McFarland again. Thank you, Dan, for your report. And I've been reading a book about, you know, being active in protecting your water supply. Our whole nation is facing some very serious problems in their water supplies, whether it's pollutants or lack of water. And it in that book, it stated that the question should be asked is if the data and the reports are being peer-reviewed. So I was happy to hear Dan talk about something about peer review. But I'm wondering, are our annual reports peer-reviewed? Are any... I don't know. So I was just wondering if any of those things have been peer reviewed in the past and would like to know that. And then there was mention of changing how the monitoring would be done in regards to the new Skyline well, if I took that in right. Could you clarify what those changes would be? Is it just that it's a different well that's going to be used? Or I wasn't sure if that meant that some of the criteria would be changed. And then also, I too would like to hear more about discussions of growth management. You know, the more sunlight for our community, the better. We really feel like we don't hear a whole lot from the county. There's all these discussions with Coastal Commission and different things. We don't hear any updates on that. And, you know, I think back to sunlight, that would go for the well database, I guess it was called, being up on the website. I don't think people should have to email to find that. I know some hydrologists that live here in town and they do look that stuff up. So if the link could be directly on the website, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, we have no further comment in the boardroom. We'll bring it back to the board. Any comments for Dan? Further comments?
Well, I can answer some of the questions and then see if that generates any comments. There was a question about the color coding on the implementation plan chart, or the sometimes we call it the reggae chart. It's red, yellow, and green. Well, it's really more of a stoplight color coding, just trying to help visually emphasize green represents higher scores and higher ranks, yellow intermediate, and then red as the lower ranking scores. And we color coded it based on how each of the projects or initiatives scored relative to each of the individual scoring criteria, and then sorted it based on their total score and color coded that. So hopefully that helps explain that. There was a comment about the use of recycled water, and the lack of additional recycled water. I think it's commonly known that Los Osos has less recycled water than it was envisioned in the basin plan. And I think that's largely we can thank the community for their significant water conservation efforts. The water recycling funding study and the analysis of the different alternatives is really, it's somewhat focused about, you know, if new wastewater becomes available, how to use that. But it's also focused on what is the highest and best use of the recycled water resource that we have currently. And, you know, we've got some anecdotal rules of thumb that we utilize when we evaluate it, but we're really looking to that study to better quantify and better inform some of those. So like one rule of thumb is that, you know, if we can use recycled water to offset water demand from one of the Los Osos purveyors, that is probably one of the highest and best uses of the water. So, you know, projects that you can use recycled water for landscape irrigation, we've got the median here on LOVR, and we've got a number of projects that the county's leading to connect the schools to the recycled water program. Those schools are currently receiving a purveyor water that's primarily water pumped from the lower aquifer. And so we calculate that could provide a one-to-one benefit in terms of 1 acre foot of recycled water provided for 1 acre foot of potable reuse not required, or that could be used somewhere else or not pumped from the basin. So that's probably what we consider our highest benefit. The use of recycled water for disposal at Broderson, you know, based on some of the analysis and modeling we've done, we see that as like a 2-to-1 benefit. So 2 acre feet to Broderson provides a 1 acre foot increase in sustainable yield. And that's based on modeling outputs from the current steady state model. And so just to clarify, when I say 2-to-1, or it's really a 0.5-to-1. It's not as good as a 1-to-1 benefit. It takes 2 acre feet to receive the same benefit. So that's another way where we kind of try to assess and prioritize our use of water. But we're really looking to the transient model to improve those assessments and prioritizations. The couple of comments around growth allowances, and yeah, obviously that's critically important to the community. And, you know, so I would say that we'll continue to look for ways to work with the BMC party representatives and county planning and the county as those discussions move forward. And a lot of that is largely driven by coastal commissions timelines. And so I will try to continue. That's why we have a whole land use planning component of the executive director's report to provide updated information as it's available. And, you know, as frameworks and ideas or concepts gain more momentum, then we will be definitely bringing them to the BMC for their consideration as that moves forward. There was a question about peer review. So, the transient groundwater model is being peer reviewed, as we mentioned. The annual monitoring reports aren't directly peer reviewed. I mean, the annual monitoring reports are prepared by the BMC's hydrogeologist. they're reviewed by the BMC's executive director and staff and, well, elected representatives from each of the parties. And then, you know, the entire report is made publicly available and typically receives pretty extensive review by engaged stakeholders. And so, but we don't currently fund, you know, a technical expert to perform a peer review, and, you know, something that could be considered, but it would cost additional time and money. And changing, oh, there's a question about changing of the monitoring metrics. So yeah, I think that's an important one to talk about. We right now we have a water level and a chloride metric, and that presents a single value that helps us understand where water levels and chloride concentrations are in the basin. And that single value is an aggregation of the monitored water level and chloride concentration of a number of key wells that were designated during the development of the basin plan as the wells that are provide representative data for the basin. Some of those wells have challenges providing representative data. And also we've constructed two new dedicated wells, as well as modified existing wells, to improve the data that we're collecting since that framework for those metrics was developed. And so there are opportunities, I think, to improve those metrics in terms of how they are providing us with representative data on the overall health of the basin by incorporating these new wells, you know, and data points. And so that's what's being considered and will be, but no changes will be made without obviously bringing it to the BMC for their review and approval consideration. So I think that was the primary questions I wanted to address.
All right, thanks, Dan. Any additional comments?
Yes, I would actually like to address that last thing you were talking about, Dan, on the metrics. So I notice we haven't got there yet, but I do think that updating the metric to show not only data on an aggregate basis, but also on an individual basis would be really useful. And it would help us to visualize what is happening where in the basin, because I think right now the one metric is good, but it doesn't tell the whole story. So I would like to see that change made in our future metric updates.
Yeah, that's a good comment. And it is what is included in kind of the draft metrics concepts that have been developed so far. Yeah. And I think we'll talk about that more in item 9B. But yeah, there's advantages to aggregating it down to one number to make it accessible and sometimes more understandable, but you lose but you lose the granularity of all the different things that are happening in the different portions of the basin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chuck, any comments or anything on this one?
No, nothing to add.
Yeah. So, Dan, just good job on the website. I think it's really good. I liked it, went on it. Really appreciate that. There's one area where it talks about, what was it? It's the board meetings or something. And so maybe we just add like board meeting and agenda, because I had to go into that tab not knowing that the agenda was going to be there. So I don't know. I just see it on some of the other agencies. One little adjustment, but overall, I liked it a lot. It was good. Actually went back and listened to the meeting that I didn't attend last month. So, yeah. And then I think the matrix, we'll talk about that on 9B. I'll comment on that a little bit. The initiatives, studies, and some of the progress, you know, we're going to be in a little bit different position this year with that. Where before we had to project and budget, we have budget that's going to be ongoing and it potentially funds available. What I want to ensure is that this draws back to our original discussion about the changes we made with our banking account and such. that when we have that additional funding and we do have projects that are out there, that it follows our rules and regulations as far as that would require a unanimous vote, just the same as a budget. I just wanted to make that clear because I didn't see that or hear that in that when I went back and when you guys talked about that during the meeting, I just didn't really see it clearly out there. And that was something that we made at Golden State, made a couple comments on. Just want to make sure that that's out there as we have this opportunity for additional funding. We make sure that we follow the rules and regulations along that way. But I think looking at those initiatives, I've always wanted to kind of celebrate what we have done. You know, we hear a lot up here about what we haven't done or what we need to do. But I think, you know, Golden State, I oversee 9 different water systems. So I see a lot of different input. And we have actually done really good as an agency compared relative to some of the other areas that just can't seem to get out of the gate. So I just wanted to really point that out. It goes to all of our cooperation, our organization, Dan, your contribution, the district and S&T, all of us working together to make this happen. And even the county's involvement too. I don't want to leave them out, but we need to really celebrate that and kind of showcase that to some degree. We do have a lot more work. Undoubtedly, we all know that and realize that. And that's what we have to look forward to in the future. The joint purveyor letter. Yep. Glad. I think, Ron, you had a lot to do with that letter. So thank you for, taking and really getting that ball rolling. Appreciate that. Yeah. And then, like I said, we'll talk about the metrics on our item 9. That's all I have right now. Okay, so we're going to close the executive director's report. We're going to move to our action item 9A, appointment of BMC officers and for the calendar year 2024.
Yeah, so this is something we do on an annual basis, is appoint new officers for the upcoming calendar year. Really up to the directors for, you know, their roles that they want to fill. What I would convey, I guess just remind everybody that currently Director Zimmer, you're the chair, Director Sasena, you're the vice chair, Director Reinecke, you're the secretary, and then Director Gibson is the treasurer, or as those were the 2023 designations. I think I can convey from Director Gibson that he's happy to serve in any role as long as it's not the chair. So this could be our opportunity to volunteer him for that role, but I don't think that he would appreciate that. So I'm
happy with the way things have gone over the past year. I mean, Marshall and the CSD had seemed like the top spot for quite a few years. I don't see any reason to revisit that, but I'm happy with, and thank you for that reminder about celebrating what we have gotten done. Yeah. All the monitoring wells, the transient model, all the things that were talked about for a long time have been accomplished, new wells. So thank you for that reminder.
Sure.
I'm also happy with the way things have gone. So,
okay. I guess I'm happy too. I mean, it's an opportunity. I embrace it. And so hopefully I'm doing a good job up here. It's, you know, not being a public agency, I don't sit on a lot of boards and chair them. So I've embraced this opportunity to really learn and expand my ability to do so. So hopefully it's, I've done a good service for this board. Okay. Well, then we'll go ahead and open it up to public comment at this time.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. There is no public comment online.
I'm sorry, one public comment in the board.
Okay, just a quick comment. Thank you, Mark. I think you've done a great job being the chairman.
Thank you.
And yeah, we appreciate that because I do appreciate when you've stuck up for citizens speaking, you know, and that's important. So thumbs up.
All right. Thank you, Becky. Okay. No further public comment in the boardroom. We'll bring it back to the board. The motion
formal. Yeah, I think so.
I move to extend the current BMC officers' appointments for another year.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes 3-0.
What does the treasurer do?
They're going to have a lot to do this year because we got a bank account now.
Okay. That's true. Okay.
All right. We're going to move on to action item 9B. The draft fall Los Osos Basin aquifer water quality monitoring results and updated chloride metrics.
Yeah, that one's a mouthful.
Yeah.
It's very, I like descriptive titles.
There you go.
I really like, you know. So, yep. Thank you, Chair Zimmer. Yeah, just here to present the draft update to the fall chloride metric. Just as a reminder, and I think I get this right. So in the spring, we get an updated water level and chloride metric. In the fall, we just get an updated chloride metric. We don't update the spring the water level metric in the fall. So, what we have here, as I described a little bit, in general, the concepts of the metrics, but more specifically, the basin plan identified 5 wells spread throughout the basin that are intended to provide representative data on the concentration of chlorides within the basin. And then we track the average concentration of all those wells over time as a way to assess the progress of seawater intrusion within the basin. Just add to that, though, it's we do double count the Rosina well. And I think that was, obviously a historic decision that was made because of historically that portion of the basin where the Rosina well pulls water was where we saw the most significant evidence of seawater intrusion. So I believe the BMC at the time wanted to really emphasize, that portion of the basin because it was such a critical area of degradation. And also it's a critical area of production where a number of the production wells that the purveyors rely upon were either in the path or in the seawater intrusion, unfortunately, in some cases, or in a potential future path. The long story short, in fall of 2023, we did see, unfortunately, a slight increase in the chloride metric. And that, I think that can be I want to say it went up from 190 to 200. It went up 10 milligrams per liter. That is attributed to a number of factors. Speaking of the Rosina well, unfortunately, we were not able to obtain a representative sample from the Rosina well. I've mentioned in the past, the Rosina well is subject to borehole leakage. And so when Cletharis geologist performs the semi-annual monitoring, if the nitrate concentrations in the sample that they collect from the Rosina well are too high, it's an indicator that they're getting too much upper aquifer influence on that sample, and therefore it's not representative of the lower aquifer. And so then this happens relatively frequently, and typically Cletharis will work with Golden State to see if there's any other operational samples that have been taken in and around the time period for the fall sampling that would have representative water quality for the lower aquifer. Unfortunately, due to a number of reasons or a reason, I don't actually have the details, they weren't able to identify a representative operational sample for use in the chloride metric for fall of 2023. So they chose to default back to the fall of 2022 sample as the assumption for the water quality. And that sample was higher in chloride concentration than the spring of 2023 for the Rosina well. And so that's one of the contributing reasons to why the chloride metric went up relative to spring of 2023. Sorry, a lot of technical details here. I would point out that, you know, also the fall of 2022 sample was before the historic rainfall of 2023. So it also lacked the benefit that, that we may have seen from the increased recharge that occurred in 2023. However, there were the two other wells within the metric that increased slightly as well that contributed to the increase in the chloride metric. The Pasadena well, LA-11 in the northwest portion of the basin. This is a monitoring well that we've talked about at, you know, when we've discussed the annual report or previous metric updates. We saw a small increase in the chloride concentrations in that well. And this is something that we're monitoring closely. I think I've described seawater intrusion in the past as sometimes kind of be a bit like whack-a-mole. I don't know if it's the best analogy, but it's, you know, we've focused a lot of time and effort and initiatives towards the seawater intrusion that we were seeing in the Rosina area, the central synclinal, you know, point of the basin. And I think we've seen some good success. If you look at the annual monitoring report, there's, and I forget the specific figure, but where we have the contours of chloride, we saw them encroaching in through 2016. And then subsequently we've seen them, at least based on our monitor data, we think that we've been able to gain ground and see those concentrations of chlorides decrease or move backwards. But that's just one portion of the basin. And so we are obviously monitoring all the portions of the basin we can. And so in the northwest portion of the basin, we at LA-11, we are seeing a slow, a steady increase in the chloride concentrations that we are, you know, tracking and working to develop mitigation strategies similar to what we developed for the Rosina area. And then the other well that showed an increase was the in zone D was the Lupin by the Sea or Cuesta Inlet well. I'm trying to pull that data point up, but you all have it in your agenda packet. It's showing a slight increase from 2021. It's bouncing around a little bit, but it is showing a slight increase. And so all those factors contributed to the increase in the chloride metric that we saw in fall of 2023. I would characterize that, you know, we're still bouncing around between the more recent upper and lower bounds. This would be helpful to show this, that we've seen for chloride concentrations in the metric and potentially consistent with, you know, kind of the assessment that, you know, we've been able to make progress against seawater intrusion. We're trying to hold it at bay, and I think we're having good success in some areas, and we still have more work to do in others. And so we'll continue to monitor it. While we didn't update the water level metric, you know, I think the positive sign is that we are seeing a steady increase in water levels in the metric, significant increase in 2023, which we covered in the annual report. And I think, you know, if you look at the predictive lines on the chart, the dashed lines, it was anticipated that there may be a bit of a lag between when the water levels increased before we started to see the reductions in the chloride levels. And so that may be a bit of what we're experiencing right now is when water levels are increasing. That's a positive sign, but it may take some time before we see a corresponding overall trend in decreasing chloride levels. I mean, we've seen year-to-year decreases, but, you know, we really have seen more of a kind of an oscillation back and forth, a lot of times attributed with the year-to-year hydrologic conditions. So I think that concludes the presentation on the water level chloride metric. This is the draft. I don't anticipate it'll change, but we do call it a draft until we finalize it as part of the 2023 annual monitoring report.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Any questions before we go to public comment?
With the new Skyline monitoring wells, this is the last year we'll have that convoluted discussion about Rosina. Or are we still going to be using Rosina in addition to Skyline?
That's a good question. It's one we've talked a little bit about at the staff level. I mean, I think in its simplest form, I think it would be just swap those wells out, you know, and we could take that approach. The problem is when we make changes to the monitoring metric, sometimes you lose connectivity to the historical data. Mm-hmm. And so we need to think about how, or we want to think about how we potentially might incorporate those changes. I think hopefully it's maybe the last time, or at least it can be, well, we got suspect data from Rosina, but the data we got from Skyline told us this, and we think that that's more representative. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we have two numbers for a little while, for, you know,
right.
Yeah, five, yeah, the, 5 years or something.
The historic continuity is something to appreciate.
And that was along the lines of just documenting the 2022 number from Rosina. I know we have that little section where we talk about that it's double weighted, but somehow I didn't see it in the report. Maybe it's in there. But just really clarifying that if somebody opens that up in a year or so from now, they know that that's 2022 and not 2023 numbers. I didn't see that little footnote down there or anything that highlights that. We'll go ahead and go to public comment, and then maybe we'll bring it back. I was going to talk a little bit about Rosina and some of Golden State's operation of that, but I think I'll wait to do that after public comment. So we'll go ahead and open it up to public comment right now, Laura.
Of course. If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. There is no public comment online.
Okay. We have a public comment in the boardroom.
Linda Yon again. I guess my questions were why, maybe you could just clarify why we only do a chloride reading in the fall, yet you refer to it in the spring reading. So if you do it in the spring also, why do we only count the fall is one question. And then this bouncing around, your words were bouncing around between the upper and lower aquifer areas, you're seeing significant increase in quantity of water. Is that, hopefully I understood that right. But I think that the very bouncing comment calls for caution. I feel that the county wants us to have enough water to go forward with growth, yet a lot of us feel cautionary with that quantity amount. And if the saltwater intrusion is not reducing, either remaining the same or increasing, then we have not solved the problem, and the sewer did not take care of that saltwater intrusion issue, which was the main reason that we put a sewer in, besides nitrate and concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Lindy.
Becky McFarland again. I wanted to echo what Lindy said. It is a concern for me when we're talking about metrics that I think it's lost on some people. I don't think anybody here, but that those metrics that we're trying to reach are for our existing population. And I sometimes think the county overlooks that too. And this kind of ties in, you know, with our intertie project we're talking about for mixing in with water. And I wasn't sure how much that had to do with salt water or the seawater intrusion and nitrates. And I know Beth has talked about all kinds of other things that are in the water. So, I'm just wondering if there's the thought that the intertie would help with the seawater problem. I know it's not going to reduce the metric because it's not actually going in, but we're not going to pump that much out. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Becky. Okay, there is no further public comment. We'll bring it back to the board.
Yeah, just a couple of clarifying responses. So just to be clear, I'll try to repeat. So the water level metric is only updated once a year, and it's typically just the spring, and we attempt to capture the water level at the highest point that we anticipate seeing over a annual curve. And so if you look at water level hydrographs, you probably see them in the annual monitoring report. You know, typically your water levels are highest in the spring after we receive the winter and spring rainfall, the recharge associated with that. And then they tend to drop over the summer as recharge drops off and groundwater production increases associated with landscape irrigation, you know, the purveyors and the private well pumpers. And then a lot of times we'll tend to stabilize in the fall as, you know, temperatures get colder and landscape irrigations go down. And so the pumping influences are reduced. And that's probably a super broad oversimplification and maybe not even correct, but generally that's, you know, water the reason why we picked the spring for the water level metric only. The chloride metric is updated both spring and fall. And I think that's part of the reason why we see that oscillation. You know, you see a little decrease in the spring sometimes with that additional freshwater influence, and then it bounces back up in the fall sometimes as the pumping and draws levels down and impacts water quality. So water level once a year, fluoride twice a year. I think the significant increase in quantity of water question was really around, or the statement was focused on the water level metric. We're seeing a consistent increase in the water level in the representative metric wells. And then there was a question about the intertie influence on seawater intrusion. And I think Becky characterized it correctly. It's not envisioned that the water from the pipeline would go directly into the basin, but it would be used to offset pumping, which would provide in lieu recharge, or, you know, allow for additional water to stay in the basin and improve groundwater conditions. So that was it.
Yep. Thank you, Dan. Any comments from board members?
Yeah, I have some comments and maybe some questions. One, I'd like to go back to what we had on our initiatives and the climate change assessment, and how that relates to our metrics. I'm curious what work we are doing or what we're planning that directly relates to the different factors that come with climate change, such as rainfall intensity. That's a huge thing that's happening, and I'm hearing people talk about deep stormwater flows through town, and that's directly related to more intense rain, which we're probably going to see more of with the atmospheric rivers. So that I would like to understand how the BMC might be relating rainfall in the future versus the past. And the other one is sea level rise. I see that we are seeing increases in water level, but when I look at this graph, I see back in, you know, 1990, we were seeing a certain water level and a lower chloride level. But as our chloride level goes up and our water levels go up, it looks to me like chloride concentration in a larger body of water is increasing, which to me calls to question how the increased water levels may relate to sea level rise. I don't know if that's something that Cleith Harris is looking into, but I'm curious to know if that could be a factor in what we're seeing in our metrics in this aggregate data right here. And the other thing that I notice when I look at the chloride and the nitrate values in Rosina, I know we talk about that having borehole leakage, and that is suspect that we think the nitrate may be coming from the upper aquifer. I'm wondering, can we consider the possibility that maybe the lower aquifer nitrate level is increasing as well? And that's why it's so hard to get that data to represent a lower nitrate and a higher chloride to represent the lower aquifer. That might be a question I would just like to field with Cleith Harris to find out if they have any Any thoughts on that or any data that may suggest that could be lower aquifer increases in nitrate?
Chuck, you have anything to want to bring up? Or
no, I'd always been curious about just the slop at Rosina and how we knew when it was a good reading and when it wasn't, and it's related to nitrates.
Let me just talk. I'll mention a few things about Rosina and what we saw different this year versus other years. So over time, since we knew that Rosina had chloride levels, we've backed off on pumping Rosina significantly. It's in our lag position. And then in addition to that, with the reduced demand, there's less times when Rosina would need to run. So predominantly right now today, Rosina is only ran to monitor the well and keep it viable and active. So we have to operate that and take samples and things like that. We really don't use it as our production well, unless we need to. If we have another source out of supply or something like that, we've been operating mostly without that having to run. So the time that Rosina is sitting without actually purging out the nitrates is going longer, and so it's taking longer to run these. So it's almost like a devil's advocate, so to speak. You know, you got to run it to clear it, but we don't want to run it at the same time. Right. So we're always facing that balance. And in previous years, we've had to sample it a couple different times because Spencer would tell us that it's not a good representative sample. You need to run it longer. And so when I say longer, we're running it. This isn't a go turn it on for 20 minutes thing. This is a running for days kind of a thing. Right. And to me, that's not really what I want to do, is run a well that I know is a high contributor. So we always try to run it as minimal as possible. Also, you know, one of the things about Rosina is that it is an older well. It has a liner inside the casing. So this borehole leakage can happen through the perforations going down through the well itself. It can happen in the seal around the casing. And so once you have an additional liner, you have two means of having that water coming into the aquifer, so to speak. It could potentially make it more difficult to clean out. It's just a change. It's different than a lot of other wells. So does it add conduit for additional upper aquifer water to come in? Might or might not. It's just a characteristic of how this well is constructed. Does it take longer for that well to clear out? It might, because of that liner. So some things about the construction of the well. Overall, we have shifted, and our overall goal is to pump from our easterly portion wells, and we've done that. So that's part of the reason why it's, you know, I think your question, Beth, about why is it taking longer to clean out? Is there more contamination? Could be more contamination because it's sitting longer and it's not getting purged out. But is that the source of contamination, or is it migrating from somewhere else? You know, those kind of things maybe warrant additional understanding. But overall, just wanted to point that out. And then once again, talk about, we need to document that we're using 2022 numbers for Rosina.
I think looking at the metrics, I think it's highlighted in yellow, but yeah, there is no specific footnote that indicates. I assume that additional language would get included in the annual monitoring report, but that's something, let's make sure that happens.
Yeah.
So that okay. It is clear that, yeah, it's an old data point. Director Reinicke, you have some questions about climate change and how we're assessing that. I think really we're going to be looking to utilize the transient groundwater model in that assessment. It that is one of the real challenges with our current steady state model, is we have to make an assumption for average rainfall and then apply that every year in the steady state model, you know, and so it doesn't allow us to account for, you know, these variability, like we saw a very high peak in rainfall in 2023 and potentially below average, you know, the 3 years preceding that and the 1 year following that. You know, who knows where 2024 is going to end up. And so I think that that's was one of the key drivers, is to address this wetter wets, drier longer, drier dries, and being able to more accurately model that. And the transient model let us do that. It'll also let us evaluate the impacts of sea level rise. So that's something, yeah, that we'll need to talk with the technical advisory committee and Cleat Hydrogeologists. What assumptions do we want to make around sea level rise? The, I guess the nice thing about the transient model is we can set sea level at a certain height now, and it can increase over time as it within the model, as you know, is predicted to happen. So we can try to track that impact kind of in theoretical real time. So we can assess that as well. Yeah, you had some good questions that, you know, over my head. That I feel good. Spencer Harris questions about, you know, the increase in water level, and, you know, then that corresponding to the chlorides. And so are we seeing more mass of chlorides because we've just got more water and similar concentrations? And then I think Mark, you know, well, is as good a job as I could addressing the lower aquifer contamination component of that. That's probably a good Spencer question as well. I do know that when they do pump it, it does seem like, at least historically, they've been able to obtain representative samples, but yeah, it could be getting harder. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. So to follow on to that, do you think it would be possible for Golden State to pump Rosina over time, maybe longer, to see if we could get an accurate, up-to-date chloride level after the wells ran, maybe more consistently or
yeah
longer?
Yeah, we can, and that's what we've done in the past. The problem happens, I mean, what's occurred in the past and some of the struggle with that is that we run the well, take the sample, and then we got to wait for the results. Then that process starts all over again, right? So we get the borehole leakage. Now it's almost like we take a couple steps back and then we got to go. So it would have to be a determined amount of time, and you know, it really, we certainly could do that. One of the things about, when I was talking about that liner, let me go a little bit further into that. So we've tried to do some well rehabilitation to open up the lower portion of the liner and haven't been successful in that. So the wells, as you pull on a well, you're always pulling these sediments and fines in. It starts plugging from day one, and you work towards the end of the life of the well. When you have that liner, you have that second barrier of that happening. So to get out there and open the bottom, and even to pull water from the bottom, like we're talking about today, to run additional time, is the condition of that well that it's so plugged that we're putting more hydraulic pull on the upper and pulling. And so therefore, it's going to take substantially longer time to run the well because we're pulling more from the upper aquifer. So a lot of things, it's not as simple as turning it on and say, okay, we ran it for 3 days, let's run it for six. We really need to evaluate that. And you know, overall bringing that back, like how important is that number? I mean, you know, is that number really important to have, or are we moving forward? We can certainly talk about that more. I don't like having 2022 data out there. I think that's our worst case scenario of what we wanted to see from an already abstract kind of tough monitoring point. And that really part of the driving force for us funding these additional monitoring points, you know, and we just don't have that replacement for Rosina today. So we have to keep it. What does that look like? We can, I'll walk away from this trying to have a little better understanding. I'll work with our hydrogeologist, Toby. Maybe we get some time with Spencer, Dan, and sit around and really kind of understand what happened with that sampling and see if there are any suggestions for that. But it, when we pump that well, you got to watch what you ask for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Zimmer. So yeah, I just want to clarify, when I look at the data specifically, like if I go back to 2016, it's an interesting data point where you had 389 on your chloride and 1.8. And we kind of see those numbers do what you're saying in terms of going up and down based on what maybe upper or lower aquifer. So our current number is 235 with a 3.2 for nitrate. And if you go back to where the nitrate was lower, the chloride is a lot higher. Mm-hmm. So I think that it would be useful, because what we have is some baseline data that we could compare another chloride number to from the past. So mm-hmm. that was where the question came from.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of the variation in those numbers over time, I think, you know, I know we've lost pumping equipment in some of our other wells and maybe had to rely on Rosina. We're making that effort and making conscious decisions not to run that the best we can. At the end of the day, we have to provide the water to our customers. So those are far and few between events, but they do happen. And so that might be a contributor too, that there may be some times when we've ran that just based on demand more than I know we have in the last couple of years. We've really tried to focus in on getting better numbers for Rosina, more consistent numbers. At first, we didn't understand it that well, you know. I mean, we've gotten better over time with it too. So, but let me look at that, what the event from 2022, try to see if, I don't know if we can go back and, you know, if we've missed the mark this year and just got to live with it, and then we shoot for next year, or if it's still an opportunity this year to get a better number for us.
Yeah, and I think that's a question for Spencer. I'm guessing we probably missed. Well, yeah, presumably we would want to capture a number before we started to have rainfall associated with this wet weather season. Now, it's a pretty slow start to the season, unfortunately. So maybe there's an opportunity to go a little further than we would normally look.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay. We're going to go ahead and close action item 9B and go to our final item 10, which is adjournment. Meeting's adjourned. All right, thank you. Oh, that was-